Today's Five Clubs podcast is brought to you by Golf Pride. Golf Pride knows that a grip isn't only a grip. It's the one piece of equipment in your hands on every single shot. You might not know it, but it has a huge impact on your game. In fact, Golf Pride recently conducted a first-of-its-kind study showing the impact of worn versus new grips. It showed that on average, a focus group of adept golfers gained an extra 2 yards of carry when they played with new grips. So what are you waiting for? Refresh your grips. Refresh your game. Visit golfpride.com today to learn more. Golf Pride. Respect the grip. Welcome into the Wagyu Filet Show. Brendan DeYoung, Johnson Wagner. Brendan, it has been 2 weeks. I feel like I haven't seen your beautiful face in so long. We got to talk about the Mexico Open down at Vedanta. We got to talk about the Cognizant Classic of the Palm Beaches. Let's start with PGA National and the finish we just saw out of Austin Ekroth this Monday.
I'll tell you what, he looked like he'd been there 1,000 times. I guess when you're swinging that good, it's kind of hard to screw it up, isn't it? I mean, just absolutely on repeat and some of the best iron shots I've ever seen under that kind of pressure.
The shot into 12 or 11 with the mud ball kind of got back left of the green. It was right where I needed to. 12 just absolutely, you know, hits a perfect shot to the back pin. 13 out of the rough. The up and down on 14 out of that downslope.
You know, that, and then even shots like 17, he had, a three-shot lead at the time on 17. Everyone's talking about, you know, aim it at that left bunker. You hit in that left bunker, who knows? You plug it in there, bad things happen. He hit this thing right over the top of the flagstick. Just absolutely flushed it. Same thing on 15. Great shot into 15. Great shot into 16 where he made the putt. And it was fun to watch. It's always nice to see someone where you can see they're in that much control of their game. And you can see there that the confidence was growing with every swing.
Yeah, I think he was third in strokes gained off the tee for the week and first or second in strokes gained approach. So clearly first in strokes gained tee to green. And, oh, by the way, he putted really well. The second shot into 16 to me was by far the best swing. It's that right pin. You know, if you pull that left, you're down over in the bowl and have an awkward two putt up the hill. He took it on knowing how confident he was with his swing and played that little draw kind of away from the water, away from the flag to 10 feet and just buried it. You know, this Austin Ekroth, Brendan, he was in the first class of the PGA Tour U program, and there was four of them that got their card in 22 Korn Ferry Tour season. They were the first graduating class from 21, and four of them got their cards. I think Brandon Wu was one of them. I don't know the other two, but we're seeing this PGA Tour U program really pay off, getting these kids out onto the PGA Tour a lot quicker and easier for the top level seniors that are playing the game.
Yeah, without a doubt, it's one of those things that has certainly worked. Obviously, we know what Ludwig Oberg has done out of that program as well. But yeah, these are guys that were the class before that. It's one of those initiatives that has paid off right away. Looking back, it is. It's a great, great idea that they came up with. And it's nice to see this kind of success so quickly from the guys that did come out of there.
Erik van Rooyen is continuing his hot play, had a good finish in the Mexico Open. I believe he finished T7 or 8. He was definitely in the top 10 and then had that amazing round. What did he birdie? The first six holes yesterday on Sunday starting. A little bit unfortunate that he couldn't keep that round going, but was able to finish. And I didn't think, you know, I think he was overplaying the Seminole Pro member this morning, just in case there was a playoff they were going to shuttle him back over. But he is on a heater right now. That all kind of started with that win at Worldwide Technologies last fall.
Yeah, he's playing some great golf, and another guy where you can see the confidence is growing. And yeah, I agree with you. He kind of got screwed there with that weather. Was just rolling. You know, it was 8 under through his first 10 holes, standing in the middle of the 12th fairway when that massive storm blew in. And yeah, you know, we both know when you're going, you want to keep going. You've got that momentum on your side. You feel like you can birdie every single hole. And yeah, that got halted for, I think they had a 3.5 hour delay. Bad timing for him. But, you know, on the flip side of that, it can certainly work out. If you're struggling a little bit, then you get a delay like that, it can work in your favor. So, you know, you play this game for long enough, you're going to have good and bad breaks.
Are you surprised they went two balls off of one tee with knowing that weather was coming?
I really am. The fact that they played three balls on Saturday with no threat of weather and then all of a sudden went two balls on Sunday, it really made no sense at all. If they had gone early split tee start threesomes, even with that 3.5 hour delay, would have had no problem coming and playing. It would have probably been four or five holes they would have had to finish Sunday night. So yeah, I think the field staff kind of dropped the ball on that one. And talking about dropping the ball a little bit, so I watched a lot of the golf this weekend, and I remember PGA National being a ball buster, just a very, very scary golf course to play. I hate the fact that they made 10 a par 5. I absolutely hate that. You know, there were guys hitting wedges in there. I think the hole played 4.2 for the week. 4.2 is a hard par 4. 4.2 is a stupidly ridiculous par 5. So I really didn't like that. They removed the fairway bunkers down the right on 6.
Yeah, and the one on 10, there used to be bunkers on 10. That was done a couple of years ago. I think 6 needed those bunkers gone. It was too much of a penalty, but they have definitely tried to make that place much kinder and gentler. That's a great point about 10.
Yeah, I was looking through the past results, and I think 11 of the past 17 winners had all been in single digits. I think what did Ekrod end up shooting this week? 17 under, I think. Tournament record. I know now 10 is a par 5 that you had 4 shots right there. But the Florida swing is tough. It's just meant to be tough. I don't like the fact that they're going in there and kind of mollycoddling these guys.
Well, I think the rough was down this year from where they had it in years past. And, you know, the 4 shots difference making it a par 4 to a par 5, that was huge. And they didn't have they didn't have the normal high winds. The course was soft. It was very, very manageable. I'm with you. I always love tuning in to PGA National and just seeing carnage. I think at one point I may still lead most balls hit in the water on the bear trap. I mean, and by the way, they built over the back tee on 17. Don't you remember hitting 3-iron in there? Now these guys are hitting 8 and 7 irons on Sunday when we used to be lacing long irons from that back tee.
You know, it's I was looking at, again, just trying to bring back some memories. I remember making a cut on the number. I think this was maybe 2010. And I went out and I shot 5 under on the weekend, and I finished in the top 10, you know, which was 2 under par at the time. 2 under, I think I would have finished almost dead last after the cut this week. I like that golf course being difficult. It's meant to be a difficult golf course, and I understand they can't do anything about the wind and the weather. But you can set up the golf course a lot more difficult. I remember there being chip-out rough. I don't think we need to have chip out rough again, maybe, but you certainly need more rough than we had this week.
2009, I was early on Friday, and I don't know if I was even or one over par. Didn't think I had a chance to make the cut. I'm staying at PGA National. Couldn't get a flight out that night. My wife, Katie, had just gone home the previous day. She was pregnant with our first child, Graham. And I meet a couple buddies at the pool at PGA National, run into Boo Weekly. Next thing you know, we are playing beer pong on the edge of the pool at PGA National. One of my buddies taps me on the shoulder. It's getting dark out. And he says, by the way, you just made the cut on the number. You're going to be in the first 4 groups out the next day. And so it's like, it was the kind of place that you never knew if the wind blew. It's kind of like TPC San Antonio for the Valero Texas Open. You can finish in the morning, the wind can pick up, and that cut line can move 3 or 4 strokes in a heartbeat. And we just lost a lot of that with PGA National this year.
Yeah, we did. And I don't want to sound like that grumpy old man. I feel like I sound like Brad Fable, the rules official that always used to bitch about how easy everything was now. But it's kind of that golf course's MO. There needs to be carnage. I mean, I remember probably on 3 different occasions walking off that golf course, and I had mud and muck all over my pants and stuff from hitting a ball out of the water. It's just, it's that kind of golf course. There needs to be carnage. And honestly, I think to a man, a viewer would enjoy seeing that kind of stuff.
Yeah, but to the other side of that point, I think that tournament started losing its great field year after year, just losing a few more guys that even lived down there that didn't want to play because the golf course was set up too hard. So it's a fine balance. I mean, I know tour players are a little soft and don't want to get beat up that hard, but you've got to find the balance to where players want to come play it and it remains difficult.
Yeah, you do. And I agree with you there to an extent. I mean, I know that they're going to Bay Hill next week. They know that Bay Hill is going to be really, really difficult. And they don't want to essentially get beaten up 2 weeks in a row going into the Players' Championship. So I do understand that. But I feel like maybe we're catering a little bit too much to the big names, trying to attract them by making a golf course easier. And well, essentially, it didn't really attract that many more of the big names. There's still a lot of guys that live down there that didn't play. I know Justin Thomas is a local resident. He didn't play. Rory McIlroy did come back, which was a huge draw for this tournament. Ricky Fowler was there, but still, it wasn't a really top-heavy field, I guess.
It was definitely had a better... It had a better feel over the previous week, which was the Mexico Open, which you and I were both working. And I mean, how about Jake Knapp coming back after what he did in Mexico in that shootout Sunday with Sammy Vallamaki to come back and finish fourth the very next week on a setup like PGA National? And Brendan, I was fortunate to walk with his group Saturday. I've never seen anything like what this guy did Saturday at the Mexico Open. He didn't miss a shot. Looked a lot like Austin Eckroat finishing up the final round of the Cognizant. Just didn't miss a single shot. And then the guy comes out on Sunday and has got the left misses, and you thought he was going to completely crumble. But he ultimately had some great up and downs on that Sunday for the Mexico Open win, picking up his first win of the year. The third rookie on the PGA Tour to win this season, which is shocking, with Knapp, with Nick Dunlap, with Matthew Pavon. And when you look at Nick Taylor winning the Pebble Beach, it's like Hideki Matsuyama winning Genesis was great, but we're not getting like these huge big name superstars winning these tournaments. Do you think the tour's a little bit concerned right now?
They are. Nick Taylor was Waste Management on Pebble Beach.
Thank you. Thank you.
You're right.
Thank
yes. You. No, I do. I think the stars need to show up. You know, I was looking down a list of all the winners this year, and Wyndham Clark is a big name in the game now. I do understand that. Outside of Wyndham Clark, there's not really any big names. Hideki was a big name. Hideki will be a big name again, but at the time was outside the top 50 in the world. So, yes, the tour needs the stars to stand up, and the tour needs stars to stand up now. We've got some really big weeks coming up. But speaking of stars, you mentioned Jake Knapp there. I think we got a future star in the making there with this guy. He's got a swagger about him as well. I kind of like it. Yeah, he kind of got that gunslinger walk around. I think this guy's going to be really, really good. And I don't mean to blow my own horn here, but at 9:53 a.m. on Thursday morning, doing PGA Tour Live, I predicted Jake Knapp as the winner in Mexico, and he came through. I was sitting there with a great host and a good friend of ours, Mayan Patel, and Mayan asked me, you know, name a young guy who you think might be someone to watch this week, and I said Jake Knapp, and you know what, he got it done for me.
Too bad you couldn't get that in on our Five Clubs pick earlier in the week. I saw you post that on Instagram as well. So horn sufficiently tooted. Well done, Brendan. You have a real way of handicapping young golfers. I want to get back on Austin Eckroat a little bit because I had a nice encounter with him at the Mexico Open. It was Tuesday night. It was a caddy party on the par three course right in the middle of all the hotel buildings at Vedanta. And this place is unbelievable. It's a 10-hole par three course. They only played nine. And I actually did a double loop. I was caddying for my old guy, Matt Hauser and David Geese, and they played in the first shotgun and wanted to go back out and play again. And they got paired up with Stone Coburn, who was awesome. Who's Austin Eckroat's caddy, and he, like, stone cold Coburn. I mean, this dude is a beast. Austin came out and walked the last six or seven holes, and his wife Sally was out there, and just, and I'd been around him once or twice before, but I can't describe how refreshing it is to be around a young man like that, that has had so much success and that is certainly looking like he's going to have a ton more. Just one of the most genuine guys I've ever been around. His wife Sally was a sweetheart, and Matt Hauser made like four birdies in a row to finish, just burying putts. And so Matt's a little bit convinced that Austin's good play this week was because Hauser inspired him on the par three course late night, drinking some Heinekens and pouring in bombs.
Matt Hauser and David Geese in the same group, a couple of caddies that are very relieved that they're not caddying for you anymore. They've found a bigger, better things. But yeah, Austin Eckroat, I mean, every interview I've seen with him, the guy sounds so grounded. And again, we're talking about Jake Knapp being a superstar. I think this guy as well, he is a flusher. A very, very repeatable golf swing, very good golf swing, lots of speed there as well. And it's nice to see some names. We talk on one hand about how we need the stars to stand up and perform, but on the other hand, there are certainly some stars that are making their way.
Yeah, and his swing, it's unique. It's not built in a lab. It's clearly he's been out there, you know, just grinding on his game forever. And I think it's nice to see these unique swings. And Jake Knapp, seeing a guy that can just hit the ball so hard, to have the amount of control that he does on sort of off speed three quarter shots, like these guys are so in touch with everything. I'm just really happy that I'm not out there grinding against those guys anymore, trying to make a living.
Yeah, isn't that the truth? I like the way Jake Knapp is able to control his speeds. No surprise that he's played well in two windy weeks. Very, very nice arm swing there. And he played the first three rounds this week with Rory McIlroy. I mean, how this guy's life's changed in 2 weeks. Go win, you play the first three rounds with Rory, and outplay Rory through three rounds. So, there's a lot of good things that are going to come from Jake Knapp through the rest of this year and moving forward.
He had that wonderful finish at Farmers as well, finished T3. And you think about the ballpark that Torrey Pines South is, the ballpark that PGA National, where he played well this past week, and then the Mexico Open at Vedanta. That golf course is massive. You would struggle mightily if you had to tee it up there. There's just probably a lot of fairways you couldn't even reach. 10 comes to mind. One would be hard for you. And so I'd like to get your take on the Mexico Open and what that golf course is like watching it for PGA Tour Live.
Thank God I don't have to play it. But from a watching standpoint, and I'm going to guess we probably don't agree on this, I kind of liked it. I had never been there. I'd never seen the property. There were some difficult par fours. I like these guys having to hit three woods and three irons into par fours. I don't remember the last time I saw that. I'm so used to seeing these guys bomb drivers over dog legs and stuff. You didn't have that option at Vedanta. It seemed like your long holes were straight. So you're having to play the hole as it's designed. And it was nice, you know, to see the 10th hole there. I think I saw a stat that it was the third most difficult par four on the PGA Tour last year, the entire PGA Tour, one hole in Zozo in Japan and one hole in a major. I think it was the 6th hole at Oak Hill. But other than that, this was the most difficult par four. And it's nice, as I say, you know, I'm so used to seeing these guys tee a driver up 6 inches off the ground and just smash it over the top of the dog leg. They didn't have the option to do that at Vedanta. I liked seeing guys having to hit shots from that 150 to 175 range. I don't feel like we've seen any of that. I feel like we've lost all the good mid-iron players out of the game. Although, as I say that, Austin Eckroat did a pretty good job of that this week. But it was something different. You obviously were on the ground. I know you don't have real good feelings about that golf course, but let me hear why.
I played it in 22, the first year, the event there. For a guy like my length, below average on by tour standard back then. I mean, I hit multiple par fours where I had to come in with three wood, and I was walking Sunday with Henrik Norlander on that 10th hole that you speak of. And there's a water down there that comes into play about 265. So Henrik hit three wood off the tee to kind of keep it short and left of that penalty area. And he hit the most beautiful five wood I've ever seen into that green. And it's hard. There's a fine line for me because yes, I agree with you with guys like Jake Knapp having to hit four and five irons into some of these holes, but then you turn that around and I would say over half the field, Ches Reavy hitting lumber into a couple par fours. It seems like length is always an advantage, but on that golf course down there at Vedanta, it's on steroids, like how much easier it is if you can fly the ball 315 yards.
Yeah, I'm guessing, you know, just listening to you, and I know we've spoken about this before, that if I played that golf course, I'd probably feel strongly the other way about it. But from a viewer standpoint, I kind of like seeing guys have to hit some shots in there, which, again, it's very, very different from the norm that we have become used to seeing.
Let's talk about that final group, the Cognizant. I had really high expectations for Shane Lowry coming in. I know he got kind of weathered out a couple of years ago when Sepp Straka won. A big storm came in when he was on the last and didn't really have an opportunity to make birdie to force a playoff. Seems like a venue that he plays really, really well. And I just he never could get it going. I know teeing off at 5-something was really difficult on Sunday evening. But what happened with Shane?
You know, I feel as though maybe he put a little bit too much pressure on himself. You know, he lives in the area. He's spoken about how much he wants to win this tournament. He obviously loves the golf course. You know, he mentioned that when he got kind of screwed with the weather there with Sepp Straka, his last top 10 was at the this golf course as well last year. So very, very obviously plays well there, feels comfortable around the golf course. I think Shane, and I'm not going to try and make excuses for him, I think Shane needed some wind. Yeah, I think he needed some wind on Sunday. He is a very, very good wind player, likes to hit those kind of shots. I think he kind of got a little bit hosed there by the fact that there was absolutely no wind. And as you say, it's hard when you've got that five-something tee time. You know you're only going to play five holes, six holes, whatever it was. Sometimes it's hard to motivate yourself to really get going for those six holes. And both of those guys got off to a terrible start. David Skins was 2 over through his first five. Shane was 1 over through his first five. So no momentum in that final group either.
Good for Skins, the way he came back. I mean, he hit two of the worst shots I've ever seen off the first tee left, almost into the penalty area left. That I obviously, you know, it's there, and I'm not afraid to hit the ball left, but that was left of left. And then into three, the par five from the left rough, pulled it all the way into the penalty area, was 2 over through three. Good for him, got it back, ended up finishing T4, best finish of his career. His previous best finish was a T29 at the RSM Classic, $44,000. So certainly with that finish, he's going to have the biggest paycheck of his career. That's a guy that played at Tennessee, similar vintage to us. I remember playing quite a bit with David on the Korn Ferry Tour back in the day. He got his card back in 22 and lost it, only made a couple hundred grand for the year. Really good to see him get it back quickly. And hopefully this is a sign of some good things coming and giving us old guys a little bit of hope.
And suffered a really weird thing on the golf course. I don't know if you saw this. His caddy was walking off one of the tees, slipped and fell, and landed on the bag. David went to hit a putt. And as he took the putter out of his bag, obviously realized that this putter was completely bent. Called in the rules official, was able to bend it back to where he felt like it was actually usable. Putted with it like that for the first round, then took it somewhere and got it line lofted, obviously, and kept it in the bag. But that's always a little bit disconcerting when, you know, your putter, obviously you're so used to looking down and seeing one thing. Then even if you feel like you've got it back to normal, it always kind of your mind plays a little bit of tricks with you and you think, hang on, is this exactly where I thought it was? So just a strange scenario there with his caddy busting his ass and landing on his golf bag.
Sounds like Piggy was on the bag. And the way he was bending that back, I saw the replay of it. I mean, he was being forceful with that thing, which obviously moving metal, you have to be.
Yeah. But yeah, you know, he, as I say, felt like he got it close enough to where it was and putted pretty good for that first round. And then, you know, actually made a good 10, 12 footer down the hill right after he bent it back. And then, as I say, got it line lofted and used it for the rest of the week. Didn't take it out of play.
Yeah, it's pretty darn entertaining. Brendan, I've been playing a little bit of golf myself. Just came back from Ohoopee Match Club with the second annual Rusty Nail, which is a charitable event put on by Jonathan Ishii. We raised over $100,000 for the first tee of Charlotte. We were at 70 last year, so over 100 this year. So we're climbing towards that $200,000 number. It was such an incredible 3 days down there, practice round, 5 9-hole matches over the course of the next 2 days. My partner and I played well, put up a good fight, but we did not make the shootout. My brother, TJ, and his partner, Will Calder, were defending champions. They took our flight down again, and it had some, you know, pretty amazing trash talk throughout the entire. But ultimately, the tournament was won by George Dewey and Bill Lovett. And man, they played well, made a nice par in the shootout. The only team to make an alternate shot par, and took home the cash prize and the honor of the Rusty Nail title, which I think is probably the greatest trophy in all of golf.
I mean, what a great initiative you guys have started there. You know, $100,000 is awesome. That's a trip you invited me on and then uninvited me, so thank you for that. But I fully understand. No, that's great to hear. And, well, we both love Ohoopee. It's such a cool place, and what a great place to do something like that.
Yeah, it was a blast of a trip. Need to work on my ability to enter home better after a golf trip. I think you've experienced that with me coming back from Calusa before and some other places. So a constant learning process for this guy.
Yeah. You know, I mean, it's not one of those things you want to force. You learn it slowly. I think you're just so excited when you're on a trip, and it just takes you a little while to come down with that high, which is understandable. I'm not going to say I haven't egged you on a couple times and maybe put you in a little bit of trouble with that re-entry, but it's always entertaining to watch.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. All right. Well, we also had the comeback of a former star. It had been 12 years since Anthony Kim had played a professional event. And I have to say, I during the rain delay Sunday, I tuned in and I watched a little bit, didn't get to see much of him. I was keeping track of his scores, but I don't know what to think of it. I think it was kind of a sideshow. I think you take that much time off golf, it's hard. I think he ended up 15 or 16 over last place by a mile. How'd he look to you?
Terrible. I Anthony Kim now is some kind of like, he's like a mythical creature. Like, you know, people would say that they saw him pop up here, or he popped up here. He's kind of like the Loch Ness monster, you know, in LA. He just pop up every now and then. Now Anthony Kim is back playing golf. He's, as you say, 12 years removed. The game has changed a whole lot in 12 years, as you and I know. No, we're unreasonable to expect him to play well this week. I don't think that was ever the expectation. But to get back to this mythical creature, I don't think there's anything that Anthony Kim can do on the LIV Tour outside of winning 5, 6, 7 times in a year where he's going to live up to what people remember Anthony Kim being. You know, the guy that went out there and took down Tiger Woods or made 10 birdies at Augusta and around. You know, he goes out there and he plays some solid events on LIV, maybe say he gets a couple top 10s or whatever. That's not going to do anything for Anthony Kim. You know, the expectation is that this guy is still some kind of world beater. This is the greatest talent that kind of went away. I don't think he can live up to that. Now, obviously, we don't know what Anthony Kim's financial situation is. We don't know anything about his personal life at the moment. I hope that the reasons for him doing this are all the right reasons.
What, that he wants to come back and play high-level professional golf again?
Yeah. That is it, that he feels like he can come back and compete and can get back to being where Anthony Kim was.
Would you make the look of the t-shirt, shorts, untucked, all that?
I didn't care for it, to be honest. Obviously, he did don a collar for the tournament. That was more of the practice round look. There were also times, and I watched a lot of it, where obviously it's hard to look like you're interested when you're playing that badly, but he looked disinterested at times. And if this is your first golf event back in 12 years, you should be really fired up to go and play. And I understand a lot of that is Anthony Kim's persona and his personality and stuff. But I don't know. I guess what I'm trying to say is that I wish him the best. I just don't have real high hopes.
He was a rookie with us back in 2007 on the PGA Tour. I remember doing rookie orientation with him and hanging out a little bit over the first couple of years. And then he kind of elevated his status up to that superstar world. Obviously was the Ryder Cup just darling in 2008 at Valhalla for Captain Paul Azener. It's a shame. I don't know what he's going to gain by this, to reiterate your point. He had that big insurance contract if he never played again. Yeah. So I don't know if he's got to pay that back or if there was a statute of limitations on that, but hopefully we'll continue to see him play and he'll progress up the road. I think there's a lot of people that probably paid attention to Liv Jetta this week just because Anthony Kim was coming back. So. The golf course actually looked pretty sweet over there. I don't know if I saw more than 5 spectators for the hour that I was watching. It did not seem like a very well attended event, but course looked good. Joaquin Neiman gets another win, sort of solidifies the Augusta National, the Masters, giving him a special invite to the Masters this year, which is great. Joaquin Neiman has really made an effort to play globally since going to Live and play in these big world ranking points down in Australia where he won. And I think he's really justified that berth into the Masters. And he was always one of those guys that I really loved watching play. And it's good that we can see him there in April.
I tell you what, he's playing some golf. Like he was absolutely smashing it with the driver and hitting all kinds of different shots. I honestly believe he is going to come into Augusta as one of the favorites. You know, I looked at his last 6 results around the world. As you say, he went down to Australia, played in Oman, I think maybe played in Malaysia. Just as you say, did everything he needed to justify an invite from Augusta, and good for them for giving it to him. But I tell you what, he is playing some very, very impressive golf. And I tell you what, if you want to put a little bit of money down on someone, Joaquin Neiman might be a good bet.
Well, you had Brooks Koepka at the Masters last year, and that went pretty well for you. I played with Joaquin once, and the dude hit the sickest flighted driver I've ever seen. It was like this head high cut that flew over 300 and ran 30 yards down every fairway. I mean, maybe that's not necessarily the greatest fit around Augusta, but I know he has other shots in the bag. But yeah, I'm a big fan of him, and hopefully you're right. Hopefully he'll be there in contention for us Sunday at the Masters.
To your point there, they showed him their version of TrackMan, whatever it is, on the live tour. He hit one, and I think ball speed was 187. There was 4 feet of curve, and it was a 61-foot apex. I mean, just an absolute laser. And I think it went like 315 in the air, rolled out to 380. Just it's very, very impressive. And another guy that's just swinging with so much confidence. Yeah, he's speaking of caddies that had a slight upgrade there. Gary Matthews used to work for me for a while. He's on the bag for Joaquin Neiman now, just absolutely killing it.
Yeah, just cashing in. I saw the animal on TV. I definitely meant to say something about that. Yeah, definite upgrade. Similar shot shape, but a little bit different in distance.
Yeah, it probably makes a little different sound off the face there. Yeah, they have another feature there on Live called Player Mike or Caddy Mike or something. And Gary's very, very good about speaking a little bit louder anytime that thing's on him, and he's got a little bit of the spotlight. So he's enjoying the extra spotlight that he's getting out there. But yeah, Joaquin Neiman playing some very, very good golf and took down a good field, and there were some big names in contention there.
Anything else you want to get into before we move to Bay Hill?
No, I don't think so. I think we've touched on most of it there. We did talk about this, how the stars need to step up. This is the time right now. You know, we're going to have two great fields in a week, being Bay Hill and the Players. I want to see the stars with some of these new stars integrate. I want to see a Jake Knapp up there pushing Scottie Scheffler down the stretch, something along those lines. An Austin Eckroat taking down Rory McIlroy. You know, I think we're to that now, and that's what we need. That's what the PGA Tour needs.
Yeah, I'm completely with you. One guy that I think is a future star, if he's not already a star, who finished in that tie with Eric Van Rooyen at the Cognizant for second, was Minwoo Lee. I thought he was going to make a run early Monday morning. He just could not buy a putt. Kept hitting pretty good shots, but Minwoo is a sneaky guy. He had a good Players Championship last year. He's a sneaky guy to look out going forward down this year.
Yeah, we talked about Jake Knapp with having that swagger and a little bit of aura about him almost. Minwoo Lee's that same way. You know, he's already got this cult following of let him cook. I agree with you. I think Minwoo Lee is going to be a big, big star. Played great at the Players last year as well. So it's going back to a golf course that he's seen. A lot of these golf courses he's seen for the first time. So I think Minwoo Lee is going to be one that's certainly worth watching.
Bay Hill is one of these places that – it's so refreshing to me, getting back to what you were saying about PGA National. Bay Hill, if weather cooperates, they completely flip a switch going into Saturday, and the greens become absolute bricks. And a lot of players don't like it. I always found it to be amazing because you know, two under par moves up. And I think there are not enough places like that we play anymore on the PGA Tour where you've got to go shoot five under a day to think you have a chance of winning. Bay Hill is one of the exceptions to that, and that's kind of where I'm going with my pick, is someone that is good at shooting two under par and escaping a little bit of trouble.
Yeah, I agree with you on Bay Hill. It was a golf course that kind of it always beat my ass. I think this week we've seen four difficult par threes. I think those four par threes at Bay Hill are harder. When the PGA Tour staff wants to extend those, they can all outside of 14 play 230. Thereabouts, those to me are the four hottest par threes. When those greens get firm, you know, like that back right flag on 17, you can't hold it back. There's nowhere to hit it back there. It's just a tough golf course, and I agree with you. We don't see enough of these golf courses where you do, you shoot even par, you shoot one, two under, and you're moving the right way on the leaderboard. And I hope we get the weather that that Bay Hill deserves. It's a big event. It's again one of our signature series events. So I hope we get the weather that it deserves.
Speaking of that 17th green, the last time I played, I think it was 2019, I top 10'd at, I finished second at Puerto Rico, and it got me in. I was like first alternate, got in for Davis Love on Thursday morning. My buddy Tony Fabrizio was caddying for me. We played well, made the cut. And Tony, he kind of worked with me when he caddied for me too. And he was able to get me hitting a left or right shot. And I stood on that tee Sunday on 17. I'm like, Tony, I'm going to slice a 5-iron here and see if I can't hit this green. And you know me, I hooked the ball. This was the best iron shot I've ever hit in my entire life. Towering high fade, lands right kind of front middle and is just gone over the back of the green. It's an impossible hole. Some guys even play for the upslope of that front bunker because it's the best place to get up and down from.
Yeah, it is. It's one of those. I mean, I feel as though sometimes par threes, when you're trying to miss the green, may be slightly unfair. It should be an option to hit a ball on the green. But yeah, you know, Bay Hill, as I say, it was one that always gave me nightmares. There's too many tee shots where, as a fader, you actually need to start it down the waterline. I used to have
3, 6, 3, 6, 11.
I would wake up with cold sweats thinking about some of those tee shots. I honestly remember thinking on 6, I could stand there all day and just bury ball off the ball in the water.
Because it's a retee stitch.
Yeah, I think I hit it out of bounds right a couple of times just because I didn't want to hit it in the water. But yeah, it's a hard golf course. And again, it's going to be a great field, so it should be good watching.
You couldn't take the DeChambeau line just short right of the green?
No, I always played that hole into the wind. It was difficult. Story of my life on the golf course was uphill into the wind, so it switched us.
You got a pick?
I do. And it's a pick, and he played this last week, and it's more of what we've talked about over and over and over. Kind of stop start. Was going nicely on Saturday, makes a triple on 16, tries to play a ball out of the water, leaves it in the water. Just kind of gets stuck in neutral from there, then has a great finish. Obviously, I'm talking about Rory McIlroy. I think Rory's driver is such a weapon. I think that can set up the golf course for him at Bay Hill, and has obviously had past success there. And I think, you know, we're talking about getting closer to Augusta now. Rory has ramped up his schedule going into Augusta. I think this is kind of where now he takes the next step. Very slow West Coast. Certainly a step in the right direction here at PGA National. And I think now this is where he takes that next big step as his final preparation for Augusta.
Well, Rory's never a bad pick. I'm going with my heart on this one. He played well here last year at Bay Hill, kind of collapsed a little bit coming down the stretch, has not played since Riv. I'm going with my favorite golfer of all time, Jordan Spieth. I think his creativity around the greens, if it firms up and gets fast, I think he's always going to be a threat there just because nobody's going to run away from him on that golf course. So I'm going with Jordan Spieth.
How many times have you picked Jordan Spieth so far?
That's just the first time this year.
Okay, just checking.
I may have picked him at Kapalua.
I think I know you have a record of all of this written down.
I do.
I'm not surprised to hear you pick Jordan Spieth. No, I agree with you. I think anytime greens are firm, you're going to miss a bunch of greens, and he's very, very good with that wedge in his hand. So we'll see.
Brendan, it has been a pleasure talking with you today, and thank you all for listening to the Wagyu Filet Show. We'll be back with you next week.